Yes, Paul?
Paul Hasselbeck from Interior Health. Thanks very much to all of you. It's been a wonderful morning and a great deal of plethora of information that we'll take back and take some time to mull over. I'm reminded of something that David Butler Jones said in Winnipeg this week, that we don't need to have others shooting at public health. We're doing a pretty good job of shooting ourselves. And I think the caution that needs to go back is that we've got some really good controversy here, and we need to discriminate what's controversy and what decisions need to be taken. In particular, I absolutely appreciate the controversies over the universal immunization program. I think we've got two aspects there. What I wouldn't want to do is have anyone leaving this morning with an impression that we should be revisiting at this time some of the other components of our influenza immunization program, and I'm afraid that some of that may be occurring. And so it's more a comment, and I appreciate that it is a comment, that we do need to have that forum, and we do need to establish the criteria under which we would modify the program. But I think everyone, and maybe this is the question, what are the criteria by which we would actually take away any immunization program? And if you're going to raise those questions, as we did this morning, it probably doesn't justify saying it's unethical to do the randomized trials. It's just a matter of entering into those trials with appropriate consent and appropriate approach to the ethical issues. Are we prepared to do that? We've certainly got the leadership and the expertise in the province to build on.
Yeah, I wouldn't want people to go away and single-handedly decide that their elderly patients or those with chronic conditions don't need influenza vaccine. That's certainly not where I would go. What I would instead suggest is that collectively we need to be honest about the strengths and limitations of the current vaccine that we have and advocate strongly for improvements in the vaccine, because we're serving nobody by turning a blind eye to the limitations of the vaccine. In terms of the ability to do randomized controlled trials, while we may wish to do that, there needs to be collective push for that. And that's in part why we need to open our eyes to the limitations of the vaccine so that we can get those RCTs done. Ethics boards would be reluctant to approve a randomization of a patient to a placebo where there is strong belief that the vaccine is going to protect, especially against serious outcomes. So it requires some education of ethics boards and some support from the public health community to have those studies done. And in fact, those studies are being done with randomization not to placebo, but rather between the current vaccine and improved alternatives to that that are on the horizon. And results from those studies are anticipated. I just think we need to be eyes wide open and honest about what we know and what we don't know, and at the end of the day ensure that we get proper consent. And part of that is recognizing the current vaccine is the best that we've got currently.
We have a question from the audience. Is this related to this area?
No.
So, Ian, do you have a comment?
Well, just to say that a couple of programs in Ontario, unfortunately, have been introduced in a very political kind of way. Ours is one of them. And the first thing I'd like to say is that I think that's really the wrong way to introduce immunization programs. I know our premier was about to have an election, but I still think that you need to have a scientist or a public health expert talking about why we have an HPV program rather than someone who was trained to do other things, frankly. And I agree with Paul, absolutely. I think that I have some questions about our program and so on, but I guess my bottom line is if we're going to do it, which we are in Ontario, then let's not do it in a half-baked way. I think I said that. Let's do it fully and really evaluate it and see where we are. I think we actually have had some benefits. And I mentioned about the young medically compromised coming out. One other benefit truly is that the message of protect the people around you is an important one, and that's made it easier both for people who live with, but also care for people with who are vulnerable to influenza. And I would really appreciate the talk on the whole issue of making policy about that. And I think this has actually, I think, helped to facilitate our discussion in Ontario.
Yes. Thank you very much. It was fabulous presentations, and I'd like to thank the Deputy Minister for staying all morning. My name is Wendy Williams, and I'm with the Health and Home Care Society of BC, and I have two questions, if I'm allowed. One, is anyone at BC Centre for Disease Control or the Ministry of Health asking the citizens of BC if they will be getting their flu vaccine this fall? And if so, will that data be made public? And second, a question for Beverly Hagen on how you dealt with the risk of anaphylaxis on your drive-through clinics.
Two questions there. I'll take the first one. Yes, absolutely. We are in the process of planning surveys to ask about influenza intent to be vaccinated with a swine flu vaccine. I think the big challenge for us, just in having discussions about the best timing for that and how we could interpret those results, is that our situation even now is very different perhaps than it was 3 or 4 weeks ago. And intention to be vaccinated in the month of July, if that's when we conduct a public opinion survey, may be very different from intention to vaccinate in November or December when we actually have vaccine to offer. So yes, we fully intend to do that. We don't want to be uninformed, but in terms of how that might translate to some, you know, an evolving situation, I think that's a big question mark for us. And we definitely want to be in a position to develop the best messages that we can. Right now, a lot of that messaging is not available because we don't know what kind of vaccine we're going to have. We don't know what the target population is going to be. We don't know whether it'll be one or a two-dose strategy. So I think lots of things still to happen in the coming months. And Bev, the drive-through, I have to say that when I saw that photograph, I remembered in the late 90s, our discussions in Ontario in pandemic planning were exactly about drive-throughs, partly because of the infection control issues and not having people who are potentially already sick coming into crowded areas. But it's very interesting to see it actualized.
And we were very fortunate. We had several physicians on our influenza team, one of whom was an allergist. And so they looked at the issue and really felt that it was a pretty negligible issue. And, you know, it sounds like it's really a truly rapid process, but the reality is that the cars go pretty slow through the whole drive-through process. So it's not as quick as just, you know, a minute and then through. It's usually a few minutes. People need to get themselves back adjusted, get their clothes back on, and, you know, they're cycling out through the drive-through. So it hasn't been an issue at this point. And, again, it was really helpful for us to have an allergist on the team to help to address some of those issues.
Could I just add one thing? And that's just to remind ourselves that anaphylaxis really is a very rare event as well. And while we need to be prepared for it, clearly, mercifully, we immunize, I don't know how many millions, 8 millions of people in Canada every year. It doesn't happen very often, thank goodness.
Brendan Hanley from UConn. I want to, first of all, thank you for allowing us to participate in a wonderful morning. My question is for also for Beverly, and it's now that you've established a perfect process, have you or are you looking at outcomes? And I suppose one could look both at absenteeism, staff absenteeism, but perhaps more importantly, any evidence on reduction of nosocomial transmission?
We are, and we haven't put out any data yet. We're still monitoring the data. And one of the things that we've been looking at is the sick time occurrences for our staff. And we do have a little bit of data that shows that there has been some decline, but there's also been some uptakes in sick time. So one of the things that we didn't have, and we still don't have a very good indicator of, is exactly why people are calling in sick. And so we need to have a good mechanism for helping us to determine why people are calling in. But we did see an initial decline in our sick time incidence. It was from about 7.1 hours per employee per year down to about 5.1. And then subsequently we had an uptake. And so we're going to continue to monitor that and look at that. And then looking at morbidity and mortality is a little more difficult. And we've had some challenges in looking at that data, but we're going to continue to work towards getting a little more evidence.